Thanks so much for being with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to welcome back to the microphones David Knutson, this time from our Superior station, our studios there. David is a former chef instructor at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, grew up in Cumberland, Wisconsin, and he enjoyed the cooking of his grandmothers, his aunts, and his mother, and then he enjoyed cooking for them, too. And he spent years and years living and cooking in Scandinavia, and the result of all of that is a new cookbook. It's called Tried and True, a collection of our favorite recipes. It's David Knutson and Mary Stenberg is the co-author on the book. And it's kind of, it's a pretty cool book because it's sort of like an autobiography, too. You get right down to it, of David Knutson. I'm so pleased to have a chance to talk with him about his book. Certainly, if you have questions for him as we talk about cooking, there's so many things that we can talk about with him, about maybe foods that really speak to us as part of our culture. Where did those recipes come from? Who was the family food historian in your family? Do you consciously preserve and pass along family recipes, and how do you do it? David's kind of doing that in his book, I think, and he's in addition is providing us with lots of tasty recipes. David Knutson, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's nice to be back.
No, it's great to have you with us. Been a couple of years since you've been on the show, and I know a lot of people, we still get a fair number of emails from folks that said, let's say, where's David Knutson? What's he up to?
I think the last time that we spoke, you called me in Sweden.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
And then we had our food conversation over the Atlantic.
So what have you been up to? That's what they're going to want to know.
Well, for about the past year, it's been this cookbook. It started last October, and then it finally came out in July. So that was sort of a very busy winter, and spent a lot of time in Spain that I was in Spain writing recipes, keying recipes, and making sure that they were correct and they were, you know, the proper can size, etc. And then spent the summer in Sweden and am back at the cabin in the north on Copper Mine for this fall. It's been a beautiful fall. So,
hasn't it been? Oh, man. Well, you wrote Tried and True with Mary Stenberg. How did you two happen to collaborate on it?
Well, we have been colleagues at WITC since I started there in 1988, and we had very parallel paths in our lives, but we never knew each other. And once we met each other, we found out that we both had a passion for food, and we both used avid users of the 1940 Cumberland Cookbook, and the food forged our friendship. Say that fast. And, we talked about it. We should write a book. And I think if it hadn't been for Mary, I probably would still be saying, I should write one. But we finally got together on it last fall and wrote during the winter, and she edited a lot and proofed a lot, and here we are with Tried and True.
Yeah.
450 recipes.
And I love how you've organized it, too, because you give us a little taste of your life as you go through the different sections.
Yeah, it really, as I say in one of the sections there, that this is my autobiography in recipes, and it really does follow me through every stage of my life, starting with in my great grandmother's kitchen near Shell Lake with a glob of potato water bread dough. That's my first conscious food memory.
Oh man.
And the recipe is in there.
David Knutson, our guest today, former chef instructor at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College. He and Mary Stenberg have a new cookbook out. It's called Tried and True, a collection of our favorite recipes. You're going to want to take a look at this book. I can tell you that right now, because I've been paging through it, and I'm seeing a lot of things that they'll be tried in the Mueller household over the next year or so. And probably if you had a copy of it, you'd be doing the same thing. I'd love to hear from you as we visit with him. Maybe you've got a question for David, or maybe you've got a recipe that you want to ask about, or, you know, we've got Halloween coming up, and then right after that, we got Thanksgiving. So maybe there's some food-related or recipe-related questions there at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment, or maybe you got a nice food photo you want to post. Post it right there at The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You know, you mentioned in your book that when you were on the program, when you and I were on, we'd start talking about a recipe or one thing or another of food, of course, but often we'd get off on all kinds of tangents.
Oh, that was always so fun, and I have notes from every program, and I have the heading of what we started out talking about, and then the list of things that we got off on that had nothing to do with appetizers or whatever the original idea was. It was always kind of fun to visit around the state of Wisconsin. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, well, actually, and I tell you, I and our listeners enjoyed it as well. Dale in La Crosse has a question or comment. Dale, hi.
Hi. David, I heard you mention a 1940s cookbook from Cumberland. Is that a real cookbook, and where can I get a copy of it if it is?
Oh, it is a real cookbook, and I have no idea where you would find one. It was published by the Methodist Church in Cumberland in 1940, and it was a standard in every household that I knew of. And I happen to have my great aunt's copy, and I, you know, it would be antique bookstore. I don't know. You could try it on Google it and see if somebody might have one. I'm sorry, I can't help you more.
I bet you if you got a hold of the local library or the Methodist Church, I would just put Methodist Church in Cumberland. I can't imagine there'd be more than one Methodist Church in Cumberland.
Mm-mm.
No.
You probably
the library though. Might
but the library,
possibly.
Yeah, the library might well have. Copy, but maybe who knows? Maybe the church revised it and sold it again.
Well, they
that
did.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. They did republish it, I believe, in about 1989. They just republished the original one as it was, and then added a section in the back of more current recipes. But I don't know if those are for sale. I haven't heard that that's true. But the library might be a good start.
Mm-hmm. Good
places. All right, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And by the way, I just should mention now, we'll mention this again later on, but Tried and True, your book, Tried and True, a collection of our favorite recipes, how is that available, by the way?
Well, the easiest way is probably to email me, and the book is $10 plus $3 shipping and handling by Media Post, and you can email me at bigknut. BIGKNUT at hotmail.com.
And I think we have Judith. Judith's looking at me, giving me the thumbs up. On our Facebook page, we've got that too. So how you can order a copy, you just click on that and we can put you right to the big Knut, David Knutson. And at a pretty reasonable price too, I might add. You may have some questions for David or comments. If you do, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Where did your love of food and cooking come from? Was it from your great-grandma?
It started there, yeah. She was the one that encouraged me to experiment in the kitchen, and I remember making a Jiffy cake mix at her house, and my first recipes that I ever wrote down were her The first recipe I ever wrote in this very childish handwriting is her pancake recipe, which is in the cookbook. The best buttermilk pancakes in the world. And then it went to, you know, her daughter, my grandmother, Grandma Talbot. I don't know if the family lived to eat or ate to live. You know, the food was the focus. And my mom and my Grandma Knudsen and assorted aunts and great aunts. And food was really the focus. And it still is in our family, and it still is for me. I still love it.
Yeah, and your dad even got into the act of it, too, once the cabin came into play.
Yes, he did. He had his own little cabin cookbook, and he was thought everything should, if it had more than four ingredients, it probably wasn't worth making.
Well, you know, there are a lot of great recipes that you probably only need about four.
Yes, there certainly are. In fact, there is a cookbook called The Four Ingredient Cookbook.
David Knudsen, our guest. He'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. I think all of us have a recipe or two that really represents our family and our ethnic traditions. For me, it's a cassoulet that my mom used to make, and my grandmother had some home-baked bread that was just unbelievably good. I've never been able to, frankly, make it as good as she had. But I tell you what, just brings back some vivid memories of time spent with families. And one of our favorite guests over the years has been Chef David Knudsen. He's a former chef's instructor at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, grew up in Cumberland, enjoying the cooking of his grandmothers, his aunts, and his mother. And add to that years spent living and cooking in Scandinavia. The result is a new cookbook. It's called Tried and True, a collection of our favorite recipes. He joins us from our studio in Superior. And David, a real pleasure to have you back with us.
Well, thanks, Larry. It's just great fun being here.
I'm telling you, I'm really enjoying it, and I'm really enjoying your book. It's your cookbook. It's wonderful. Fred in Port Wing has been waiting quite a while to talk, so I am going to go right there. And Fred, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Yes, am I on now?
Yes, you are.
Well, listen, first of all, I want to thank you, Larry, for bringing David Knudsen back on again. It's always a pleasure to hear him. But the reason I'm calling is that the last time he was on, he gave us an excellent recipe for corn pudding. And unfortunately, it got rave reviews when we made it, but we lost the recipe. And my question is, David, is that recipe reproduced in your new cookbook? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right.
I don't believe that one is in there. I'm not sure. There are two of them in there. One is Mary's and one is mine, but I'm not sure if it's the one that was on my website when I still had Knudsen's Kitchen. But if you send me an email, I have it in every recipe that was out on Knudsen's Kitchen, I have somewhere.
Oh, so actually, if he goes to my Facebook page, we've got where to order a copy of Tried and True. If he just goes there.
Right. That would be fine. And if it says it's the corn pudding from Wisconsin Public Radio, I can go back through my Word files, and I have it somewhere. I know. I don't throw away recipes.
All right. There we go. We've got, let's see, great information to share on the Cumberland Cookbook. Listener Jan called with her copy of it in hand. It's called the Cumberland Cookbook Number 3, and it's from 1940. It says it was compiled by the Dorcas Society of the Methodist Church.
That's correct.
About 70 pages long. And that matches what you have, I bet.
That's exactly right. My sister doesn't really enjoy it as much as I do because it does not usually give you a pan size or tell you how long to bake something. It just says, you know, bake until done.
Well, whereas your book is much easier to follow in that regard.
Well, we tried very hard. Mary was really, really good on that, trying very hard to make sure we said put in a 2-quart casserole or bake 25 to 30 minutes, and tried to even adjust things so we didn't say season to taste. So, because those are things that irritate both of us.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I prefer... go ahead.
The list of ingredients in the order that you're going to use them, instead of the water is at the end of the recipe and that's what you're supposed to use first. That just drives me nuts.
So now we've got the ingredients in the order that they're used, which really makes this a lot easier. It's a lot easier.
Yeah. That was a cardinal rule for my students. You had to have it in the order it was used.
And you actually talk about some of your students, like your first group of students at WITC. This is a little thing in there. You had three, I believe, to start.
I had three, yes. When I came, I came from Norway to Ashland to take the job as a food instructor, and there were three students, Lenore, Jan, and Lou. And I not too hard to remember your whole class when there were three. But they were just the best. They were so excited, and they were the ones that got the Glass Cafe restaurant up and running. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. It definitely sounded like it. I'm kind of envious. I would love to have been able to sample at that Glass Kitchen restaurant that you had there on the campus.
It was quite an experience for everyone and for me, and I learned just as much as the students, I think, sometimes. It was a great fun.
We had an email. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's just amazing how food has, you know, affected my life. So and just following food has led me all over the place.
All over the world, as a matter of fact. We have an email Reed says, I have too many tomatoes that I had to harvest before they froze. Can you direct me to some fresh tomato recipes in your book? Or do you have recipes in the book that involve fresh tomatoes?
I'm trying to think if I've, it was really a tough decision trying to whittle it down to 450 recipes because, and I'm wondering if, I'm trying to think, did Mary put, I think Mary has her tomato soup recipe in there, and I can't remember if that uses fresh tomatoes or not, but I don't think I put any of my ketchups or things that, you know, that use fresh tomatoes. Sorry.
Facebook question from Timothy. My girlfriend, who is Greek, made pistitsio for me this weekend. P-A-S-T-I-T-S-I-O. It was out of this world, and I don't know it.
I don't either.
Well, somebody else will probably come let us know something about that, but I honestly don't know anything about that.
No, and I don't have, I used to always come equipped with a food dictionary so I could frantically look things up while I did find Mary's old-fashioned cream of tomato soup starts with 4 cups of sliced fresh tomatoes. So there's one, at least one in there that uses fresh tomatoes.
All right, Mary shot us an email. She just got home. She's tuning in and listening, she says a very heartwarming experience for her, well, for both of you, as they keyed in the recipes and you wrote the notes about the origin of each recipe. It was like a trip down memory lane.
Definitely.
Well, it's a way, as she says, it's a way to preserve all of your very best recipes, many from relatives and friends who are no longer with us.
Exactly. And my grandmother, my Grandma Knutson, who I learned so much about entertaining or having people in, as she called it, also told me that she wrote the year and she got the recipe and the name of the person that gave it to her on every one of her recipe cards.
Wow.
And that's a practice that I continue. And then sometimes even I note on there, use this Christmas in 1982 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like a little, you know, it's a little diary of your life.
You know, somebody let us know that pistitsio that we were talking about is a kind of a Greek shepherd's pie. Has macaroni and a bechamel sauce.
Okay. Yeah, white sauce, yes.
White sauce, yeah. So there we go. Okay. Now we know.
You see, you don't need a food dictionary on public radio.
Well, it's not the first time that somebody brought something up we didn't know the answer to, and somebody else called with the right word, the right information.
Yes, and that oftentimes steered the whole program in a whole different vein. It was always fun.
Matt in Madison has a comment. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Well, I heard you guys were asking for, you know, memories or recipes that are from your family and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And one of them that I always have used is my grandma's recipe for black-eyed peas and ham.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds good.
She used to always make it on the first day of the year that snowed, like in the fall. If it was the first snow of the year, that was always the day she would make this black-eyed peas and ham. And hers was a real simple recipe that I've ended up, you know, improving, I guess, over the years. But, you know, it's really just as simple as cooking the black-eyed peas and like three ham hocks in a soup pot of chicken broth or chicken stock and letting that cook until the ham literally is just falling off the bone. And then you take the ham out and debone it and everything like that. And what I've actually done over the years is once it started to thicken up, then I've added like a small can of diced chili peppers to it. And of course served it with, you know, cornbread.
So. Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah. Oh.
Do you do it on the first day that it snows?
I try to, but I like the recipe so much, I usually can't wait until the first time it snows. So.
What a fun tradition, though. What a fun memory, too.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, no problem.
Appreciate that. That's what a great memory.
And, of course, at this time of the day, it making me more hungry than I already am.
Liz in Eau Claire. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, you had talked about pastizio.
And, yes.
It's a Greek dish, mm-hmm. and it takes a really long time to make. But actually, in the Better Homes and Gardens new cookbook, there's a really great recipe for it. I don't know if you want me to say the whole thing online, but there's about 20 ingredients or so.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. And you have to eat lots of eggs and lamb or ground beef or pork. It's kind of like a Greek lasagna is what I would liken it to.
Oh,
and it's in the new Betty.
I got this when I got married back in 1994, the Better Homes and Gardens new cookbook. But pastizio, you should be able to Google a recipe.
Yeah.
And it's very good. Very much worth making, but it does take a long time to assemble.
It's not one that your dad would have done, David.
No. He would have just turned the page.
No, it takes a long time to make it because you have to measure everything separately.
Oh. Liz, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Appreciate it very much. Well, at some point, now, I'm pretty sure you didn't figure we'd be talking about pastizio today, David.
No, I wasn't on my list.
Oh, man. Well, we had an email from Jim in Madison who's interested in Swedish desserts. Do you have a good fattigmon recipe?
Yeah, I do, and I don't remember. Mary and I debated that a long time. Should we put in a lot of those or not? But I'm looking here to see if we included fattigmon. It's in Norwegian, that means poor man's cookies. And yes, there is a recipe in the cookbook for them. They're very simple, actually, because they're... in fact, Mary's recipe and my recipe are both in there, and they are made with lots of eggs and cream, and I don't know why they call them poor man's cookies.
Yeah, I'm just wondering that myself.
And you roll the dough very thin, and you cut it into they're putsy. You cut them into mm-hmm. a diamond shape, and you cut a slit in the middle of the diamond, and you tuck one end of the diamond, you pull it through that slit, and then you deep fry them.
So it's a little fussy then.
Yeah, they're I think a lot of the Scandinavian women must have had a lot of time or something. I don't know. It just seems like some of those things just are so time-consuming, and they're good. But, you know, if after you stand and make a couple hundred rosettes or a couple hundred krumkaka, you think, how did they do this? You
know? Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. Todd in Cross Plains, we turn to you. Hi, Todd.
Hello. It kind of goes with the last talk. I remember a dish my grandma used to make, used to call it krub. They were big potato dumplings with suet. Sometimes she'd put even blood in them, blood krub. And they were about the size of your fist in a thick potato soup. And you break them open and put butter on them. And in the winter, before we got sledding and go out in the cold, we'd always eat them. And you'd stay warm for about 2 hours after we eat them.
Right.
My brother and I did a contest to see how many we could eat also.
But you didn't want to fall through the ice because you would never come up. You'd just sink to the bottom of the pond.
That's right. It was a really good, rich food that I just can't reproduce, but I think Grandma actually used suet in it. You know? I mean, like real heavy.
Yeah.
Well, it was good.
Yeah, krub is the raspbrød. That's the Norwegian name for it, and the Swedes call it something else, which escapes me right now. But usually, tucked in a piece of salt pork or side pork in the center of it, and otherwise it's just finely grated potatoes and flour and salt. You know, the basic Scandinavian ingredients.
A fond memory.
Thanks, Todd. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. You know, you mentioned bacon till done as an instruction, and Ben emailed us and said, I'm wondering, I'll bet, he says, the bacon till done instruction on the old recipes was because of the old wood stoves, and there was no way of controlling the temperature of the oven to give a set time to bake. You know, there's probably, that makes some sense.
Well, Larry, now I just finished baking a whole bunch of stuff on my wood-burning cook stove, and I think that I can hold it at 350 real steadily by the... And there's an interesting thing about that. One of the reasons that many of our baked goods are baked at 350 is that is an easy temperature to hold in a wood stove. It's hard if 370, 400 is harder to get, but 350 is a pretty standard with a good fire. And I read that in some food history thing, that's why many of the cakes and cookies and things that we bake are all baked at 350.
Oh.
And I think there must be some reason, some validity to that.
Well, it makes some sense. Well, that's an interesting little tidbit that I'd never heard before. Wow.
Well, and I also have an old cookbook that tells you how to test the temperature of your wood-burning stove. If you can hold your arm in up to the elbow to the count of 10, it's 350 degrees. and I suppose if you come out with blisters, it's 450. I have never tried that, but that was how they told you to check. If they called that a moderate oven.
Oh, man. David Knutson, our guest. As we talk with him today about food and cooking and about his new book, the book that he wrote with Mary Stenberg, it's called Tried and True, a collection of our favorite recipes. You can still join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you yet, as we still have a little bit of time left in the show. I really enjoyed the little experiences that you write about cooking in the woods, in the cabin. Though that was pretty cool. Your dad broke down, bought a cabin in the woods, and it turned out to be a pretty good purchase.
Yeah, he actually built it. He bought the land and bought a bulldozer and cleared it and built the cabin. My sister helped him saw roof boards and it turned out to not be the hunting shack that it was started as, and it became sort of our family getaway. And we've had lots of food events at that place. And yesterday I had a visitor from the Netherlands there and tried to whip up some things that had Wisconsin products in them, like cranberries, and use some pecans and a few things that would be typical of the United States. So, yeah, a lot of fun to cook out there.
I want to go back to the how to get the recipe. I know we have a few people without access to email have asked if there's another way to get the cookbook, but let's go over all the ways that we can get that copy of your cookbook.
Okay, well, the email way is bigknut, BIGKNUT, @ hotmail.com. And otherwise, they could write to me. Shall I just give the address?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. Someone will have to have a – get your pencil ready. 13295 East Copper Mine Road, and that's in Gordon, Wisconsin, 54838.
54838?
Yes.
So it's, let me just repeat again, 13295
correct.
East Copper Mine Road, Gordon, Wisconsin, and it's, the zip code is 54835?
54838.
538, okay, I couldn't read my own writing. Which, as my wife would say, yes. Neither can anybody else. 54838. All right. Well, and it's $10 plus $3 for shipping.
Postage and the envelope.
Yeah. So just send a check and make it out to you.
Yep. That would be perfect.
If you are online, you can just go and didn't get all that information. You can just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You don't have to be a member of Facebook in order to get there. And you can click on that. We'll send you right to the spot where you can get a copy of the book. And Lily and Edgerton, maybe we have time for you. Hi, Lily. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on another level of complication of dealing with grandmother's recipes written out many, many years ago. My grandparents had an old German bakery. And she was asked many years ago to write down recipes for the family, and she dutifully did, but a lot of the recipes say, like, 5 cents worth of walnuts.
Oh, yeah.
Grandma Talbot's Hershey Bar Pie, 2 5-cent Hershey bars. There you go.
Oh, boy. Well, Lily, thank you for that. That's a great way to kind of end the show today. David, it's been such a pleasure. I'm talking with you. I hope we have a chance to do this again, and maybe we can talk some more about your cookbook and pick a section of it next time around and just zero in on one of those sections and talk about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry. I've had a lot of fun.
David Knutson, former chef's instructor at Wisconsin Indian Head Technical College, author with Mary Stenberg of Tried and True. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.